Hey KU fans, welcome back to another episode of the KU Sports Hour here at KUSports.com. I'm your host, Matt Tate, today, and we're going to talk a little KU football, specifically the quarterback position. We haven't talked about the quarterback position in a long, long time. It's just not a topic that comes up around here very often. It hasn't been talked about for 11 years straight ad nauseum. It hasn't been beaten to death with 100 different names and 100 different horrible scenarios. And, so we're going to get into it. How's that sound, guys?
Hey, sounds great. Hey, quick shout out to Carter Stanley for just like letting 2019 pretty much come and go without, you know, a constant like conversation and nonstop stories about, well, who's going to start this week and who played more snaps last week and what are they going to use, these two guys or these two guys? I mean, it was just Carter Stanley week after week. Thank God.
Yeah, he is a man ahead of his time. We didn't know how good he was to us, although we probably did, because, to be fair, though, Benton, you didn't exactly get off the hook completely. There were a few times last year where you had to write about the backup quarterback because...
Yeah, like, why is Manny Miles playing?
Exactly. So you didn't completely get off
the
hook, but
that's true.
Definitely better than this year. First though, let's hear about how was your trip to Waco, Benton?
Oh, great. I mean, I got up from one room in my house and walked into another room and turned on the TV and watched it on ESPNU. So it was probably my best trip to Waco ever.
Yeah, your flight was on time then and everything? No delays?
Yeah, I mean, it was like light speed.
Okay, good. Glad to hear that. Yeah, I got to ask you too. I mean, you've been at every one of these games for several years now, road games. You've been the only one that can say that. Literally on the face of the earth. I mean... There's not an athletic director. There's not a coach. There's, now that Jeff Himes is retired, there's not a Heimer. Yeah. There's literally no one. So, was it weird? I mean, you know.
Yeah, it was strange. I mean, you know how it is. I mean, when you're covering a team, you're used to being at the games. I mean, it was kind of bizarre. I mean, I got over it pretty quickly once the game's going and you're working. That part of it starts to feel normal. You know, you're just trying to do your best to keep track of everything that's going on and put together a story that, you know, represents what happened. And so that part of it was totally normal. But I gotta say, it was nice and spacious on my desk in my office. You know, sometimes you go to those games and you're crammed in some, you know, press box and hardly any room to, you know, kind of spread out and work a little bit. So that part of it I did not mind.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, and for those wondering, we're taking some precautions as far as road games go right now with the pandemic still raging. So company made a decision not to travel, at least for flights right now. And, it seems like the right safest move and keeps everybody safe and in good shape. So that's why we weren't there. But obviously we did. I think I counted again. We had 10 or 12 things up that night, which is just awesome stuff. And both of you guys did a great job covering from a distance. I was wondering if it was sort of like, here's an example, a quick story. Obviously Hamilton is all the rage, right? And you went and saw it in Kansas City, didn't you, Benton?
I did. Yeah.
So you get it. You understand it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, it's been one of the most popular theater productions in the history of the world, and rightly so. My wife and I are pretty big theater snobs and obviously aren't traveling right now either. So, we're holding out hope to go see it somewhere someday. New York would be the ideal spot, but whatever. I'm sure we'll get a chance to catch it someday. Well, obviously, during the pandemic, they put it on Disney Plus, and you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people were able to watch it that way. And I will be completely honest, like, we were excited. We were like, let's check this thing out. And we hit play, and I would say 15 minutes in, we looked at each other and we're like, this isn't right. Like, this isn't it. I mean, you know, like I said, we're theater snobs. It's not the same. It doesn't mean it can't be good, but, you know, we've been to a lot. And when you go, you're locked in, your phone's off, you know, you're seated in the theater. You don't have any distractions. at home, you've got the fridge, you've got your cell phone, you've got, you know, everything in your house, you've got other rooms you can wander into. And so, you know, we turned it off and we didn't want to ruin it for when we actually can go see it. Now, I don't think you wanted to, like, preserve the pristine world that is KU football viewing, but I wondered if it was something similar to that. I mean, did you find yourself enjoying the ability to be distracted, or did you find yourself just, like, staying there and locking in and not moving, or did you have a, you know, a nice halftime snack, or how did that go?
Yeah, I mean, I just feel like sometimes in a press box, you know, you're way up there, you're, you know, you're eight stories up or something ridiculous, and I mean, I always bring like a little pair of binoculars with me to a game just so I can, like, in case I can't quite identify a guy, like,
right.
Oh, wait, these are two numbers on the back of his jersey that I think I just saw, but it's crystal clear on an HD TV.
There you go. Yeah.
5 feet away from you. So, I mean, that part I did not mind either.
Good enough. Well, one of the numbers, or two of the numbers, I guess, specifically, that you saw belong to Jalen Daniels, the 1 and the 7 on the back of his jersey. Quickly, we'll get into some analysis of Jalen and the quarterback position like I talked about at the jump, but quickly, how surprised were you, both of you, to see him get the start?
Well, based on some things I had heard on Saturday, I wasn't surprised when it actually happened, but it's one of those things where, like, as a reporter, you don't want to jump the gun and report something that, you know, you may not have 100% right.
Sure.
So I kind of sat on that and wasn't able to maybe get enough sources to go ahead and report it, and so I wasn't surprised that he started. I knew he was going to start, but earlier in the week, if you told me that, I would have been surprised.
Yeah, there you go.
Just from kind of the stance that Miles had taken, and, you know, he was saying that McBitty was expected to play, and we found out after the game that really wasn't the case. That was just something that he was saying.
Jane? Surprised?
Yeah, I think if you were working on the assumption that McBitty was healthy, it would have been really surprising. But when, you know, we discovered that probably wasn't the case, it wasn't all too surprising when Saturday finally rolled around. Because I think we had mentioned it last week, but McVitie probably outplayed Miles Kendrick, and I think there was reason to go to Daniels if it was between Daniels and Kendrick. So it probably was, yeah. If you knew the status of McVitie, I probably wouldn't have been as surprising. But yeah, like Ben said earlier in the week, if that was brought up, it kind of would have been shocking.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. I mean, you know, surprise or not, I think my initial emotion or reaction to it was, man, this is really good news. Like, this is different than we've seen. We've had a lot of quarterbacks come through town and come through KU that have sort of had that tag of, you know, well, this guy could be the future of the position or the face of the program, and he could be the guy. And you know, a lot of them weren't, obviously. But beyond that, very few of them, if any of them, got an opportunity to just kind of be thrown out there. And early in their careers, just let's see what happens and let's see how he handles it. And that was my, again, reaction and emotion just early on in that game watching this happen. It was like, this might be different, man. I didn't necessarily expect him to go play great, but I just thought the fact that he's out there is such great news if you're a Kansas fan or part of the program or anything, because it shows you that you got a group of coaches that are willing to take this gamble, which is a gamble. I mean, I get it. The kid's 17 years old. You know, he doesn't have any experience at this level, and you're asking him to go on the Big 12 and play in a road game. I mean, that's pretty pretty serious stakes right there. But for the coaches to be willing to put him in that position not only says a lot about him, but I do think it says enough about them to where you can maybe get excited about that, regardless of what the score was. And obviously the score didn't end well for KU, and the game was pretty much lopsided for the middle, what would that be, middle 55 minutes or something. But again, the idea that they were willing to put this kid out there, I thought was really good news.
Yeah, I think that's probably the best way you can look at it if you're a KU football fan, is that it's so rare that, you know, a especially a true freshman, like, is given that opportunity.
Right.
And the thing that's going to be interesting to track in the weeks ahead is, like, will they ultimately stick with him, or will they go back to McVitty? For his development, and if you're trying to be the winning team, you know, in 2021 or 2022, it's probably best that he gets as many reps as possible this year. I mean, he does, to me, does not seem like a guy that's going to be rattled by, you know, some of the setbacks that come with playing on this team as a true freshman. You know, obviously, you're going to take some lumps. You might take a lot of them, but just from everything I've heard about this guy, it doesn't seem like he would be one to be, like, you know, totally shook, and it is a detractor to his trajectory. I think it would just make it better to get all these in-game reps. I think I was looking at some notes, and the last time a true freshman quarterback started at Kansas was Ryan Willis.
So yeah, there you go.
Years ago. But he wasn't given that chance, right? He was in one of those years where they were playing like three different guys. You know, you never knew who might be the starting quarterback from week to week. So I'm just curious to see how this plays out for Jalen Daniels this year. I think, obviously, going into next year, you almost, I mean, whether it's fair or not, I almost think about him being like the obvious starting quarterback going into 2021, but we're a long way from there, so who knows?
Yeah, God willing. I mean, that's the thing. Like, you like we talked about in the open here, you got to hope that the days like that are ahead. And I'm glad you brought up Willis, because I was actually talking about him on the radio the other day in relation to Jalen Daniels and his demeanor and his makeup. I did talk with him this summer before he came to Lawrence, and I was really impressed. I mean, sounded like a mature kid, very focused, you know, very locked in on not only – you know, football and his role and what he's coming here to do, but also improving and just enjoying the process, enjoying the journey. And yeah, he seems like he's ready for whatever. And it doesn't mean he's going to play well. It doesn't mean he's going to be a guy that puts up numbers that you're like, wow. But there's enough to like there that shows you that I think he can handle this. And that was why Willis came up. We were talking about him and that idea of him playing as a freshman. And you probably remember this. Ryan Willis, terrific kid, terrific talent. I mean, he was competitive. He, you know, he obviously went on and had a pretty nice career at Virginia Tech. And, you know, there was a lot to like there too. But in terms of his just, I guess maturity would be a one word for it. I mean, it just didn't seem like he was quite ready for that stage. Do you remember? And I think you were there. If you weren't, then my apologies. But do you remember at a presser on a Tuesday when he was talking to maybe five or six reporters at the table? And it was, I think, the first time we got a chance to talk to him. So it might have been his, you know, redshirt freshman year or whatever it was. But, you know, he's getting questions about, you know, nothing serious, not asking about turnovers or a play call that went wrong or anything controversial. It was just, you know, peppering him for information. How did it feel? What were you thinking? How did you prepare? How do you like this? How do you like that? I mean, just, you know, firing away. And he stood in there and kind of answered him and had a little bit of glassy-eyed look. And then he got up from the table when it was over, and he said to one of their sports information directors, "Gosh, that was pretty intense." And I mean, like, right there in the room, you know, and everybody could hear him. And were you there? Do you remember this?
Yeah. Definitely.
So,
I do remember it.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, not knocking the kid. It was just an indication to me that, oh yeah, I forgot. He's a freshman. This is, he's young still. And obviously we didn't get the chance to talk to Jalen yet. Like I said, I talked to him on the phone in the summer, but I mean, he was in his house back in California. What, you know, that's totally different than talking to him after a game or before a game. So I'm not trying to draw that exact comparison, but I do remember Ryan Willis, to me, seeming like, boy, he's still pretty young, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I just don't get that sense with Jalen, and I didn't get that sense watching him play the other night. I think this is a kid who shows not only through his play and his ability to hang in there, but just the way he has that energy about him and responds to getting his head taken off with a vicious hit. I mean, you know, he jumped up and he's like, I'm here, let's go. And that's what you like to see. And that to me was an indication that this is a little bit different of a breed, because maybe he can handle this better than a lot of 17-year-old kids could.
Yeah, I think you mentioned when the worst one was when he had slid on that run, right?
Right.
He kind of like, you know, surrendered himself, play should be dead, and you know, he got speared. He got drilled, and you know, just one of those car wreck type collisions where his body goes like, you know, slamming into the turf. You're like, oh man, is he gonna be okay? Like you said, he was up immediately. I'm like, yeah, you know, let's go run the next play. And I think those are the types of things that can gain a lot of respect from your teammates. But I think it also shows a lot about him as a competitor.
Absolutely.
I mean, he was fine with it. You know, is that fun? No. That's like the worst thing
right.
that can happen if you're out on the football field. But he was cool with it, and he got wrapped up and wanted to play again. So, to me, and it also sounds like just talking to some of his teammates this week, I mean, he does other things to, you know, kind of hype them up. He's good. His leadership has shown in that type of way, just type of, I mean, even when he's not on the field, it sounds like he's done things to kind of energize the team and, you know, get their headspace in a good place going into practices and games. So there's a lot to like about him, even if, you know, as a true freshman on the road, his passing numbers weren't that great. You know, I mean, that's the part that you almost have to expect. It wasn't like this guy was a 5-star prospect coming in.
Right, and it's also not like he has a 5-star offensive line in front of him either.
There you go.
And I mean, when you take your, you know, 5-step drop or whatever, and by the time your back foot hits and you got to run, like, it doesn't matter how good of a passer you are, you're probably not going to be able to set to throw. So, Shane, what did you see? I mean, you know, from this kid playing his first real game. I know he played the last series against Coastal Carolina, but that was 2 weeks ago. Might as well have been 2 years ago. What jumped out at you about him, and then we'll get into a couple of kind of fun questions that we'll answer for projecting his future.
Yeah, I mean, I was obviously really impressed. I think one of the overthrows of Parchment early in the game, he overthrew it by a comfortable margin. It was a deep shot down the middle of the field. It might have been the strongest throw I've seen from a KU quarterback in 10-plus years. Like, it was just impressive. And you knew he had the arm strength because he was throwing towards the sideline and stuff like that, but it was cool to see just him take a deep shot like that, and obviously it didn't connect, and that's something he's going to have to work on moving forward, but it just shows, like, his raw ability, and that's something that, you know, maybe the other quarterbacks on this roster don't necessarily have, because they're more, hey, we're going to throw it short and in the middle of the field and not test defenses deep or on the sideline, and then obviously you guys mentioned his running ability, like, I think you would like to have seen a little bit more of it, and I think maybe there was a conservative approach offensively early on, because it didn't seem like they had many design quarterback runs, but you would like to see a little bit more of that, because, you know, he has an ability to make things out of nothing. I mean, I think there was one play where he fumbled it, and he somehow still got to back to the line of scrimmage when he was probably fumbled about 5 yards behind it. So I think he should be utilized more in the running game moving forward, but I understand why, you know, a 17-year-old quarterback, hey, maybe you're not going to design quarterback runs with him out of the gate in his Big 12 debut.
Yeah, that'll probably be the trickiest thing too, right? I mean, like, teaching this kid to, hey, give it another second or 2 seconds to let the route tree develop, let the guys get to where they need to go, and don't give up on the pass just because you can run. And I'm sure that's how it is with a lot of quarterbacks, but especially a lot of freshmen. You know, you see the line break down a little bit. It's hard to stand in there and give it that extra second or two that you might need to complete a big play down the field. You just want to go and get out of trouble. And so, you know, that's all stuff he's going to learn. I'm sure that's something they're really working with him on. But to me, man, I think you guys saw it. Like, that arm is ridiculous, right? I mean, doesn't that thing come out like almost like nothing you've seen around here ever before? I mean,
yeah, I'm glad that Shane brought up that deep shot they took to Parchment that he overthrew Parchment on, because right after, I thought the same thing that Shane did. Like, you know, when he let it go, I mean, there, you know, there's this velocity on it that you're just not used to seeing
right.
to anything. And, I mean, I know he did overthrow him, so it's not like it was a perfect pass by any means. But I was just thinking back to, like, how many times years back did you see like Montel Cozar take deep shots? And they would every once in a while, but they would be overthrown by like 20 to 25 yards.
Good
and
point.
Just be like these high lofting throws that, you know, were just kind of out there accomplishing nothing. And to me, this just looked like a totally different type of throw. You know, this looked like a guy that eventually you could trust. You know, he's 17. He's just making his first career start in a Big 12 road game. And I'm sure he was amped up, and I'm sure that had a little bit to do with him kind of putting it out too far out in front of Parchment, which can be hard to do. Parchment's a fast guy. I don't think it's unreasonable to think that he'll be able to kind of get that timing down this year if he's given enough reps.
Sure, sure. Little known fact, the color of my front door is called Amped Up. So just wanted you to know that after you said that. It made me really appreciate my front door because it's made its way into our podcast now. But yeah, man, I'm telling you what, like I was amped up. Seeing the ball come off the kid's arm, it's a pretty quick delivery too. You know, it's not like he has to really wind up to get the ball down there and to use that arm strength. I mean, he's pretty quick with it. Obviously, he posted a lot of videos over the summer. A lot of his highlight films show that, but to see it translate and be actually happening out there, again, not to high success, not to amazing numbers, but just to be on the field and to have it be something that Kansas has at its disposal now is obviously news and big news and something that KU fans should be excited about. So we're going to transition here for the next 15 minutes or so, and then we'll get out of here. But basically, that's what we've got to look at now, right? We've got to look at three things. Number one, what's Les Miles going to do from here at the quarterback position now that we've all seen Jalen Daniels play? Number two, what should Les Miles do from here at the quarterback position now that we've all seen Jalen Daniels play? And number three, I'd like to set some reasonable expectations for you know what we should expect from Jalen Daniels, whether he gets the opportunity to be the starter and plays the rest of the eight games or doesn't. I mean, you know, so let's start with number one. I want to hear from both of you guys. What's Les Miles going to do here? I mean, what I know you talked to him Monday a little bit, and you know, I listened in on that. Wasn't real clear, but did you get a feel for how he's leaning or how this is going to go on Saturday against Oklahoma State?
Well, the way that he made it sound to me was if Thomas McGoody is healthy this week and is able to get his practice reps, they would like to give him another look against Oklahoma State. That was my sense leaving that video press conference earlier this week.
Sure.
Now, we should also kind of say that with an asterisk because Les Miles is known to say one thing, especially about, you know, a guy's availability. And actually, you know, it turns out that's not the case.
I'm going to HIPAA.
Yeah. I mean, we just a week ago, you know, he was talking about McVitie being available and he expected him to play at Baylor. And I mean, by the sound of it, after the fact, the guy maybe through on the side of the field a few days or something.
Right.
Leading up to that Baylor game. He didn't take any snaps with the offense. He wasn't available to play against Baylor. So I think you got to just kind of take everything with a grain of salt as far as like what he's saying conferences. But I also, just based on the fact that McVitie got hurt in that opener, he seemed to be their guy at that point of the season, even though they were playing Miles Kendrick too. To me, if he's healthy, I do think they will try to give him another shot. So I don't think Jalen Daniels like came out and was just overwhelmingly great to the point where you would say, all right, he's clearly our best quarterback right now. They haven't really given McVitie much of a chance. And that O-line you mentioned earlier, Tate, definitely didn't give him much of a chance
against
Coastal Carolina.
Yeah, and that's what it comes down to, right? I mean, I've had a lot of people ask me this all week, you know, well, why would he play McVitie? Why would he play? You know, partly I think it's what you just said that they haven't been able to give him a full look, and they don't really know right now what he looks like. And they are trying to win games this year, as much as it seems like it'd be cool to develop Jalen for the future. If they're trying to win games this year still, then you know it's fair to give McVitie a chance. But I also think, I mean, I you know, this is a Wally Pipp situation, right? I mean, I really think Les is the kind of guy that's like, man, that kid's been through so much. and he's done everything we've asked, and I just hate to see him have his career end like this by having his opportunity taken away because he got hurt. And you know, say what you will, people fall on both sides of the coin with that situation, but I don't think that's horrible. I mean, I really don't. If a coach wants to give a kid a chance because he got hurt and he doesn't feel like that's the right way to lose your job or whatever, then I don't hate that. I mean, personally, I wouldn't go that direction, but I can understand the compassion there, and I feel like that's, you know, not the worst thing in the world. I mean, it's different if McVitie had played two or three games and was terrible, and for some reason Les was still giving him a chance. You know, then you'd start scratching your head and say, "The hell's this guy doing? I mean, we all see it. Why doesn't he?" You know, and so that'd be a little bit more frustrating. But at this point, it's still early enough in the season, and McVitie's played just almost none that, you know, you can understand why they might give him a look. Is that fair, Shane?
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think, I mean, that's why I think it's a good question, because what will Les do and what should Les do? Or I have two different answers for it.
Right.
And I think what will Les will do is that he will play McVitie at some point if he's healthy. And I think you're going to see Jalen and McVitie, a combination of the two, at some point this season. Assuming both are healthy and ready to play. But what should he do? That's a different question.
Well, answer it. What should he do?
Well, I think you saw a glimpse on the other side of the field of why playing Jalen Daniels is what he should do. Because Charlie Brewer played as a freshman, and actually the game against KU was kind of in some ways his coming out party. And now he has, 35, 36 games under his belt. And he looks like a veteran. He's one of the better quarterbacks in the league for a reason. And you could just see in that game, like he would motion guys, he would look, he would be able to read blitzes really well and hit his route right when he saw a blitz. I mean, you just saw a veteran making plays, and that really, you know, ate up KU on the defense side and most of the time on third down. So I think that's why playing Jalen is what he should do, because, you know, it is a chance to develop Jalen and let him get, you know, game reps this year. And KU, I mean, even though that, yes, they can claim they're trying to win, this is going to be a rough year, especially after losing Coastal Carolina. The wins are probably going to be very rare. So I think just playing Jalen, giving him the reps, and maybe setting yourself up in a better position for down the road is why you play Jalen now.
Fair enough. Benton, what do you think?
Well, just based on the fact that I'm gonna start with they kind of mishandled Thomas McVitie to open the season, right?
Yep.
You know, if you really thought he was the starting quarterback, you should have just let him play against Coastal.
Absolutely.
And not subbed him out, right? So I'm just so against playing multiple quarterbacks. I almost feel like at this point, if McVitie's healthy, start him against this Oklahoma defense, which is definitely better than either of the teams you've faced so far defensively. And kind of let him, as a 23-year-old quarterback, deal with that, right? And also let him kind of, like, show what he's got. And if he does enough to impress you, then you can kind of reassess after this game. But if McVitie is healthy this week and able to practice throughout the week, I would almost go back to him and start him for this game just to see what I've got in Thomas McVitie. And, you know, if it's another blowout loss, you know, you got a bye week coming up right after that. And what a perfect time to just make that transition. This is Jalen Daniels, the quarterback for the rest of the year.
I love that. I hadn't really thought of it in those terms exactly like that. Partly because, like a lot of people, I'm, you know, high on Daniels, and I'm excited about what he's got, and he looks good, and it's fun, and it's different, you know, and so I kind of got caught up in that, but I really like how you just laid it out there. That makes a lot of sense, especially with that bye week there. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. I probably would agree with Shane a little bit more if I'm answering what should Les do. I probably lean toward he should let Jalen Daniels go and just let him fly and see what happens. What I wonder, though, is it possible to do that and keep McVitie in there? Like to your point, right? Let's say they give McVitie the first half on Sunday or on Saturday. And right, wrong, good, bad, whether he does well or doesn't do well, he plays the whole half. And let's say they're down 35-0 at halftime. Well, then maybe you say at halftime, all right, Jalen, you're up. And you let him have a half. And so it's not completely abandoning. And I know that's what you just said, is that you hate the idea of playing two quarterbacks. And I agree 100% with you. I would never plan to do that. So the idea is like, hey, McVitie, you got a chance, man. If you keep us in the game, we'll keep you in the game. And if you don't, well, then we're going to go to this kid and give him some more development and give him a chance. And to me, that's different. That's a different form of playing two quarterbacks than the idea of, you know, multiple guys in a quarter, two series for one guy, and then two series for the next. I mean, that part's a train wreck. You can't do it that way. But I'm trying to figure out if there's a bigger picture that kind of satisfies both situations here. And the one I just described would do that. I mean, let's say that happened the rest of the year, and I would like to think it wouldn't. I would like to think at some point they would just go with Jalen and you know, week five, week six, okay, enough. McVitie continues to score 0 points in the first half of these games. We can't keep going with him. So, Jalen, your ball, you know. And so hopefully that would happen. But even if it didn't, even if they started McVitie the rest of the year and he plays the first half or into the third quarter and then just doesn't have it, nothing there, and they give Jalen the final quarter and a half or the final two quarters. By the end of the year, you're looking at a kid who could be the future of the position, who has, you know, 10, 12 halves of football under his belt. I mean, what do you think of that? I mean, is that fall into the category of, hey, that's better than nothing? That's actually real experience? Or is it kind of a cheating way to do this?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of have it in both ways, going that direction, right?
Yeah, I don't love it. I'm just curious.
No, I mean, it does make sense if you were very strict in your approach that, like, all right, any week that we go out there and, you know, we're just getting blown out by halftime, the second half is all Jalen Daniels.
All development, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that would be a good way to approach it, but I also would feel like if this was happening week after week, just punt on McVitie.
Yeah.
You know, just, all right, we're over this. And we don't, honestly, going back to my earlier point, we don't know what he is as a quarterback. We've seen him play parts of a half.
Yep.
Against Coastal Carolina. I mean, he didn't play at all last year for KU.
Right.
He came in as a wide receiver twice. so we need to see him as a quarterback and kind of let him prove what he's worth, I think. So, I mean, I don't think, I'm not expecting this to happen, but he could go out and play well against Oklahoma State and make KU a competitive team. And if he does, you should probably stick with him. So I just think there's a lot of unknowns in that story.
Yeah, it's definitely early. And you know, my whole mindset is designed on, how can Jalen Daniels get the most out of this year? Because this year, like Shane said, it's you know, there's a chance they're going to be 0-10, a real good chance they're going to be 0-10. And so it's a lost cause almost already. And that doesn't mean you can't get something out of it. That doesn't mean it can't be productive in some ways. It just means you're not going to win a bunch of games. So the idea has to shift at some point to how can we get the most out of this year? And I just keep trying to focus on, boy, getting Jalen as much experience as you can get him is going to be something that you can look back next offseason and say, hey, at least we got that out of that crappy season. That's worth it, you know. And so that's where my whole mindset is just trying to figure out how this can happen. The other thing you have to remember is, at any given moment, if let's say my scenario plays out for 5 or 6 weeks, at any given moment, let's say they're down 35-0 this weekend and they do that and they go to Jalen in the second half. Well, what if he leads them to 28 second half points? I mean, at any given moment, these coaches could go, well, there it is. Okay. We're gonna make the switch. And you know, so that could happen at any point too, even if that is their plan. But man, I think we're all three in agreement, even though we're sort of seeing it slightly differently. I think we're all in agreement that the best approach is to find the one guy and just go that way, right? I mean, like, it just doesn't do you any good year after year after year after year to be having these questions and to have multiple guys factoring in. It's just, and you know, heck, we haven't even mentioned Miles Kendrick. And Benton, I'll just let you take that for a quick minute, and then we'll close it out with some expectations. But But I mean, what is Myles Kendrick's situation right now? Like, you know, he's been in the same boat a little bit that McVitie has, been here a while, hasn't played much, and now he's, you know, maybe been passed over by the freshman, but also isn't in good enough graces or whatever to get a chance like McVitie maybe still is. So what should people know about Kendrick's situation other than poor guy?
Yeah, no kidding. So strange that, you know, in the opener, he's basically quarterback 1B, right? They're bringing him in for McVitie for a possession or two at a time, and obviously ended up finishing the game, and McVitie got hurt and had a couple touchdown passes, and then he doesn't play at all in that game at Baylor. To me, that was, he must have had just a bad week of practice leading up to that Baylor game. At the same time that Jalen Daniels was practicing and repping really well, for them to go that drastic the other direction. But I think you're right too that, you know, he's, for whatever reason, they just do not like Kendrick quite as much at this point as they like the other two. Now, obviously, they liked him more than Jalen Daniels when the season began, and then 2 weeks later that flipped. So I just, what it comes down to it is that there's none of these guys that is clearly your guy right now.
Yep.
Because if it was, you would just be rolling with one quarterback. I am interested to see what kind of happens with Kendrick moving forward. It might just be a situation where, like, if one of these guys or two of these guys get hurt, you have a more than reliable kind of safety net, Kendrick playing quarterback.
Yeah, wow. That's not the situation he envisioned when he committed to Kansas, I'm guessing. I mean, and there were a lot of people that thought he might be, come in and have a chance to play. So, weird deal for sure. It's definitely been interesting. And I like the idea of that bye week. I mean, you're right. You know, we heard nothing but great things about Jalen when camp started. And, you know, he impressed a lot of coaches and a lot of players right away. And then he started looking like a freshman and making some mistakes. And, you know, everybody kind of knew that was going to happen. But people liked this kid from the beginning. And so it's no surprise to me that with that bye week built in there between games 1 and 2, that gave him an extra chance to kind of flash a little bit more and show, hey, I'm here. This is what I can do. And they got a prolonged look at it, and they decided, look, that looks pretty good. Let's see what it does. And so so that's where your whole idea about, you know, them having a bye week on October 10th as well is also very interesting, because this game could mean a lot coming up on Saturday, but it also could mean nothing because there's 2 weeks again between games after that. So it could be a whole new set of evaluations that goes on in that 14 days. And I mean, I think the one thing we can all say is that we have no idea who they'll be playing at quarterback on October 17th. Is that West Virginia or is that K-State? I can't remember.
Off the top of my head, I don't remember.
Yeah.
I think it's at West Virginia, right?
There you go.
So, yeah. So, I mean, we have no idea. That's the only thing we can say for sure on this podcast is that we do not know who the quarterback will be on October 17th. We don't really know on Saturday, but we've given enough of a picture of what it certainly could look like. Before we get out of here, what are some reasonable expectations for Jalen Daniels? Let's talk stats. Let's talk numbers. Let's, whatever you believe is going to happen with this kid, whether you think he's going to get a chance like Shane might to be the guy the rest of the year at some point, or if he's going to just continue to be a part-time player or whatever. I mean, what should fans be looking at with his statistics to figure out if this guy is somebody they should invest in, if they should go buy the 1-7 jersey, get excited about it, and be fired up about Jalen Daniels 2022 or 2021 or whatever it is? I mean, what's reasonable to expect for this kid to kind of pave the way for his future here?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you really just got to, like, I don't know, be patient with how this turns out for him. Because, I mean, like you just alluded to, we don't know what this is going to look like exactly for him in this season. If he ends up being the guy, you need to be extra patient because, you know, there's going to be some bad weeks for sure, I would assume, with a guy who's playing as a true freshman in this offense. I would just say, I mean, don't overreact maybe either one direction or the other. When you see Jalen Daniels have, you know, a great quarter, maybe it's fine to be excited about it, but also think about it like, you know, maybe this is a stepping stone for 2021. Let's not suddenly start pulling into these higher standards just because he got hot for a little bit. But I don't know. I feel like fans are probably going, the deeper we get into the season, are going to even more so get on board with wanting to see him play more. And, you know, maybe they won't have to. Maybe that he will just be the guy. I feel like I'm repeating myself, but there's so many unknowns.
Sure.
We're dealing with this situation.
Sure. Yeah, it makes sense. And you know, Shane, statistically speaking, and I know it's hard to project numbers when you don't know how much he's going to play, but can you even take a stab at that? I mean, can you even say, hey, let's say he gets a fair opportunity. Let's say he actually does play, and let's say your scenario unfolds. I mean, what would you look at? I mean, because this is a kid who can hurt you with his legs too. So, I mean, are you looking at passing touchdowns? Are you looking at rushing touchdowns? Are you looking at yardage? I mean, one thing that jumps out from the Baylor game, even though he wasn't great, was he didn't turn the ball over. And that'd be a huge, huge thing to keep an eye on, right? Like, no matter what his numbers are, if he can continue to not turn the ball over, that's going to be progress. So I know it's hard to do statistically, but what would you expect if your scenario unfolds?
Yeah, for sure. I think I mentioned running earlier, and you'd like to see more of that, but he still ended up having, I guess, 14 carries, but I think a handful of those were probably scrambles on that last drive when they were just kind of moving down the field a little bit. But you would still like to see him more in a designed run game. I thought, you know, live it looked like they were running read option, but maybe it wasn't as much read option early on. So you just would like to see more read options in that scenario where it's him and Puka or him and Belton as a rushing threat. But at the end, I mean, it'd be about, you know, 10 to 15 probably carries for him, or rushing attempts a game for him. So it's probably along the lines of what he did against Baylor. Passing-wise, he threw the ball 33 times. You probably don't want to throw, no matter who the quarterback is, that often.
Right.
I think you're KU. But, I mean, ending up with 159 yards, that's, you know, not too bad, given the circumstances. So I don't know. That's probably along the lines in terms of yardage. Maybe if he connects on a couple of those deeper balls, then maybe you're closer to the 200 range. But, yeah, I mean, pass-wise, you do what they did on that play to Robinson. You roll him out to the right, or you roll him out to his left or something like that, and try to design ways that you can get him in space when he's throwing the ball, because I think that is when he had more success, and it takes some pressure off the offensive line in that scenario.
No doubt. Yeah, that's a good point. So, I mean, if he gets a real opportunity and he can get double-digit touchdowns this year, through the air, regardless of the numbers, the yardage totals, the completion percentage, any of that stuff, that'd be a big step forward for him. And if he could add, you know, 5, 6, 7 touchdowns rushing, that would be even bigger. I mean, we're talking about an offense that we don't know if they can score very many points. So if he could do that, that would open your eyes that maybe, hey, something legitimate is here. And a quick story before we get out of here, because I love it. When I talk about him, I keep saying, what are your expectations for this kid? The kid looked good, you know, and I mean, he is 17 years old, and I'm not. So I think it's okay. But I tweeted about it on Saturday night, you know, something about, man, the kid looks good out there so far, or whatever. And somebody asked me on Twitter, they said, it's my favorite tweet I've ever received. They said, hey, when is it okay to call this guy a kid? You know, I think he said I'm 32, and I don't know if it's appropriate for me. I don't know if I should wait until I'm 40 or 35 or what the number is. And I of course didn't have a real answer, because there is no real answer. But I love the question, because that's just something that I find myself doing a lot more the more gray hair I get. But I told the guy 35 years old. If once he hits 35, I think he can call them all kids. Fair?
I think that's fair. I actually think I called Jalen kid in a tweet as well. But wow. I think when you're 17 or under, you're always a kid. So
there you go.
I'm not allowed to call 18-year-olds kids. So when Jalen turns 18, I'll no longer say kid.
There you go. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. I like that. Benton?
Yeah.
You're an old man.
I feel like anybody can call me kid. 23 or something. Sort of. So, I mean, everyone should call him kid.
I love it.
Chris Hughes the other day was calling Puka Weeds a kid.
There you go.
Everyone kids.
I love it. Well, there it is. It's official. He's a kid. And he's also a pretty good-looking quarterback with a lot of promise, a lot of room to grow, a lot of work to do. But it should be interesting, if nothing else, if the games continue to be 47-14 and you know, they're not competitive and the score is not really a question, if nothing else, the Jalen Daniels thing this year will be worth following and very interesting. Any final thoughts this week heading into Oklahoma State, you guys? Benton, just a quick one-sentence prognosis of what they're facing this weekend?
This is kind of a different Oklahoma State team than we're used to seeing, I think. It's not necessarily this explosive offense that a lot of Mike Gundy teams are, which has been kind of surprising because they have Chuba Hubbard, obviously a top-notch running back, one of the best in the country. He's kind of off to a slow start. So my expectations are, you know, this is going to be the best defense in the Cajun space so far, that Chuba Hubbard will probably be looking forward to playing this
game. Fair enough. That's all the time we have here today on the KU Sports Hour. Shout out to Tom Keegan on the microwave back there warming up his coffee. Really appreciate that. Felt like old times there, so good stuff. But for Shane Jackson and Benton Smith, I'm Matt Tate. Thanks for checking out this episode of the KU Sports Hour, and we'll talk to you guys again after KU takes on Oklahoma State Saturday afternoon at Memorial Stadium. Have a good week, everyone, and take care of yourselves.